Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Joni Cannell, your host for Real Life Lessons. This series focuses on real women who speak about what it takes to be successful in the real world. We work off the real life model, R-E-A-L, because women need to be resilient, empowered, authentic, and limber to succeed in the workplace. With me today is our leading lady, Rose Hagen. Rose's first career was in law. She went to Stanford University and Harvard Law School and worked as an intellectual property attorney for firms in Silicon Valley and Austin, Texas. Then she took a job at Google as their first trademark attorney. After 7 years, she retired from Google and from law to pursue a career in art. Currently, Rose produces beautiful works of art with paint, digital media, and fused glass. She also owns Serendipity Art Gallery in St. Louis, Missouri, and is a co-chair of Gallery House in Palo Alto, California. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning, Joni.
Thank you so much for being a real life leading lady.
Thank you for having me.
Our topic today is the art of real life. So, Rose, I've got a question I've been burning to ask you. You run two art galleries and you're a successful artist yourself. Plus, you're also a retired lawyer from Google and a former partner at some of the best law firms in the country. How did you go from one career to the other? What's your story?
Well, that was actually rather serendipitous. I am never a person who's had a five-year plan. I always hated the interview question, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Because I never thought that far out. So I went to law school because I was a Spanish major, and what do you do with a liberal arts degree? You go to law school. I then went to a law firm, because I figured I would get some experience there and figure out what I wanted to do. It's been 20-some years, and I still haven't quite figured out what I want to do. But I've learned along the way that that's okay, that just figuring it out as you go along is perfectly valid. So I went from law firm to law firm looking for the ideal law firm and eventually discovered law firms weren't for me. And I was so lucky to get the opportunity to go to Google because I loved being there. I loved the energy. I loved being part of the business. I loved the job. I loved the people. It was all fabulous. So I finally found a place in law where I could be happy. And I was really happy for 7 years. And then I got tired and started thinking about the next thing. And around that time, my dad died. And I realized I didn't have forever to figure it out. He had worked at a career for years and years and years with all of these plans for what he would do when he retired. And as soon as he retired, he had ill health and was never able to do the things that he wanted to do. So that was my wake-up call. And the thing that gave me the courage to make a radical career shift was realizing, hey, I may not be able to do what I want to do if I wait till 65 to retire. I should just take the plunge now.
Wow. Now that is a story. Sorry about your dad.
Thank you.
But the good that seemed to come out of it was you did get some courage there. You know, one of the things that I loved from what you just said is that figuring it out as you go along is okay. And so many people just have these feelings of guilt and stress about that. So giving people an idea that, hey, you know, things do change and you can work as you go along, that's great. Up to a point, though, because your other statement there, I didn't have forever to figure it out, kind of kicked you into gear there to make a change. So I'm curious,
right.
You know, oh, yeah, go on.
I was going to say, so I had taken a sabbatical from Google a few years before I left and had thought then about retiring, but I didn't know what I would do. And I was so type A. I mean, as a intellectual property attorney, you tend to be pretty type A. And I had to have everything lined up. I had to have everything perfect. And the I don't know exactly what I want to do and I don't know how I'm going to fill my days kept me from making the step then. And so it took my dad's death to really, you know, sort of make me decide, you know what? I don't have to have it all figured out. So it was kind of a, you know, you need to think about it. I mean, you don't want to just jump from thing to thing, obviously, but you don't want to stay forever in something because you haven't figured out all the details yet.
Wow, you know, I hear of that a lot, that change is really scary for people. And you're saying that feeling a little bit of perhaps discomfort, knowing that you're not going to know all the answers right now, getting through that is what helped you a little bit to make that shift.
Yes, absolutely. Because all change is scary, even if it's good change. But, you know, we're so programmed to not want to change that we sometimes even hesitate to make the good changes in our lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious, you know, what barriers did you face in your transition? You had this career in law and all of a sudden radical shift to art. I mean, how did you overcome some of these barriers that might have gotten in your way?
So I had been doing art as a hobby. So it wasn't like I just suddenly picked up a paintbrush when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me a little bit of help. But I have to say it was challenging. You know, mostly internally, mostly personally, I had identified as a good student, a lawyer for so long that when people asked me what I did, I didn't know what to say anymore. And so I had a little bit of identity crisis because I was trying to figure out, can I say I'm an artist if I haven't sold anything? What if it's still just a hobby? Do I say I was a lawyer? You know, how do I identify myself? And living here in Silicon Valley, the first question everyone asks is, what do you do? So I was constantly being faced with, what do I do? Who am I? What, you know, now that I'm not a lawyer anymore, who am I? What? And so I really had to, you know, wrap my mind around it until I became comfortable saying, I'm an artist. Also, the isolation. You know, I went from working in offices and always having people around to painting by myself in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could quite easily become a hermit if you're an introvert like I am. So, you know, making efforts to join a local art club, to, you know, schedule lunch with friends just so I got out of the house and interacted with people, that was another struggle. You know, not a huge struggle, but, you know, something I had to adapt to figure out, you know, okay, how do I, you know, find a community, create a community, join a community. And then, you know, figuring things out like how do I set up my website and how do I sell art and what are the venues? And so just a lot of things that I never anticipated. Like I wasn't just, you know, painting. I suddenly had to be a business person, you know, an entrepreneur, setting up my own business, which, you know, when you're leaving big law, where everything has been sort of taken care of for you, suddenly it's like, oh, I have to figure out an accounting program and, you know, design my website and do all of these things that previously had been done by others.
And how did you empower yourself to be able to do all this?
So, I mean, I think having had an education, you know, going from Spanish to law, I realized I could learn things. You know, so I was fortunate in that I realized I could learn new things. and wasn't terribly frightened by them. Also, having been at Google made me not afraid of tech. So I could jump in and, you know, deal with source code and figure out how to design my website, and also just learn what I liked and what I didn't like. And so I discovered after a couple of years, I really hate doing my accounting. And so I hired a bookkeeper. So just being true to yourself, figuring out like what you can do is important, but then figuring out like what's the best use of your time. And I decided that, you know, entering everything into QuickBooks was not my best and highest use. And, you know, I could outsource that, spend more time on the creative things I enjoyed, and setting up my website and promotion and social media, and let somebody else do the aspects that I, you know, wasn't great at.
Yeah, well, that seems like a big learning point for a lot of entrepreneurs. A lot of people go in actually with a different perspective, thinking they can do it all. And you came in saying, you know, I know how to do some of this and I'll learn some, but then the points that you didn't know that well or didn't like or didn't come so easily, you got help with. So how was that for you to ask for help? I mean, to go out and hire somebody. Was that a challenge for you, having been so successful all the time doing things on your own, or were you used to this because you worked in a team environment at Google? I'm just curious.
You know, I actually found it really difficult, and I still find it really difficult, because I had this sense of I should be able to do it all. And, you know, until my art business pays for itself, I felt bad spending money. So it's one of those chicken and egg things. You know, it's like, well, I haven't made enough money to justify outsourcing this, but I'm not going to make more money if I spend time doing this that doesn't bring in money. And so, you know, so that's struggle. But I found it really difficult, you know. And part of it was deciding that this was a legitimate business and not my retirement hobby helped me to be able to say, yes, this is a business. I can spend money on professionals who do part of the business, rather than, this is my hobby, I really shouldn't spend more money on it.
Right. Well, you know, I want to add to this. You know, I don't know how comfortable you feel comfortable sharing too much personal information, but Rose, you are a very young retiree in my book. So retiring from Google, you know, we think about people who retired, you know, they're much older, 20, whatever, 30 years older than you were when you retired. How was that, you know, just making that transition, calling yourself retiring, and you talked about this, is it a hobby, is it actual business? So when you made that change, were you planning to do something new, or did you just decide you were going to stop doing what you did?
So I retired at 43, and wasn't entirely sure it was retirement. It was, I'm leaving Google and I'm leaving the practice of law, but I kept my license and thought about teaching law and thought, but the longer that passed from my departure date and the fact that I hadn't yet done anything in law made me realize, you know what, I think I actually did retire. I didn't just leave a job. But yeah, you know, it's a process. And as I started out saying, you know, I've never had the 5-year plan. So it wasn't like, you know, on the day I left Google, I decided, okay, by year 5, I'm going to be doing this. It was just like, okay, now I'm not doing that. What do I do next?
I love it. Because, yes, I mean, you hear so many people always have these plans and they're doing this and that's like the straight line. But I find in real life, most people have kind of a curvy path. They go back and forth. They don't know exactly what they want to do, and they figure it out. And you're a great example of that.
Yeah, I think the people who have the straight line are the minority. You know, they exist, but we all sort of figure, oh, gosh, that's what I should be doing, when really I think the majority of people evolve over time, you know, decide, I like that, I don't like that, I'm better at this. You know, new opportunities are presented. It's hard to, you know, decide this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life, for most of us.
Yeah, this is a great lesson for younger people, too. Sometimes people are going through college or getting out saying they have to have their life figured out, and perhaps maybe that's not the case. It's having their next step figured out, and with some kind of, perhaps for the minority, people have a long-term plan, but the majority of us are figuring it out as we go along. Rose, you know, just in case our listeners want to reach out to you after our show, how would you like our listeners to contact you?
Oh, so you can contact me via email. It's rose.hagan, H-A-G-A-N, @gmail.com. Or you can check out my websites. I actually have two, one for glass, one for paintings, rosehagan.com mm-hmm. and rosamoderna.com.
How do you spell that second one?
R-O-S-A-M-O-D-E-R-N-A. It's modern rose
okay.
in Spanish.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it sounded Spanish. This is great. You're fusing all of your different careers here all into one with that.
Yes.
Well, you know, you said something earlier about being authentic, and I was curious. One of the things that I like to advise people is to be true to yourself in your career, because that's how you become successful. I mean, if you're not being true to yourself, usually you're not feeling good and you're not putting your best work out there. So let's start with your law career. How authentic do you feel you were as a lawyer?
I think I was authentic once I found trademark prosecution and counseling. I started out okay. doing patent litigation, and I was not at all authentic because I am an introvert. The litigation aspects were really difficult for me. I don't like fighting with people. I'm conflict avoidant. You might ask why I became a lawyer, but I do think there's a place in law for people who are conflict avoidant, and you know, it's probably a societal good that not everybody is looking
yeah.
for conflict. But you know, that was not authentic at all. That was me doing what I thought people, well, number one, what the job needed, and number two, what I thought lawyers did. But once I discovered mm-hmm. trademark prosecution, I was like, oh my gosh, this clicks with me. This makes sense. You know, I'm helping people protect their brands. I can see it. It was very tangible for me, you know, in ads, in billboards, you know, you saw your client's trademarks. That all felt very authentic to me. I felt like I was doing something positive.
Mm-hmm.
And there were disputes, and, you know, there were times when you had to, you know, do the parts of law that didn't feel as authentic to me, but I recognized them as a necessary part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like I was able to be authentic. And, you know, I think we all have aspects of our personality, and some people can find a single job that encompasses all of them. I think trademark law encompassed a lot of them for me, but now art is sort of adding to that. You know, I get to be more creative in different ways than you can be creative as a lawyer.
Well, that's interesting. So it sounds like creativity is a main part of your authenticity piece in all the different lines of your career.
Yeah, I think creativity and doing something good, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, people can argue whether or not lawyers do good, but I think we do. and, you know, I've heard all the lawyer jokes. But, you know, I think, you know, as a lawyer, I was helping clients. I was, you know, helping consumers not to be confused. And in art, I think art is such an important fundamental thing that, you know, people have been making art since caveman days. And putting it out there in the world for people to see and enjoy is a good. So I think both of those things are important to me. And it's been interesting figuring out what it is about art that is important to me and why I do it. Like I've done a
mm-hmm.
lot of self-questioning, you know, especially in difficult times, you wonder, why am I doing this? Is it actually helping the world in any way? Shouldn't I be starting an orphanage? But no, I think
mm-hmm.
that actually creating things and creating communities where artists can get together and show their work and, you know, feel a part of the community, share ideas, share techniques, I think that's all very important too, which is why I'm involved in the galleries I'm involved in.
Right. I wanted to ask you about your galleries because that's another type of business that you're doing. I mean, there's art and selling your art, but what's it like to own a gallery? What kind of different things that came up for you that you had to learn or that were unexpected?
So it's interesting. The gallery in St. Louis came about actually after a wine tasting trip to Napa with my brother-in-law, who's also an artist, and there was a space available for rent next to the restaurant we were waiting for a table at, and I thought that would be a great gallery space. You know, I wonder why nobody's opened that. And then we just started talking about, like, well, what would it take to create a gallery? And so we ended up opening a gallery in St. Louis where my brother-in-law and his wife, who runs the gallery, live. And it hosts about 25 different artists at any given time.
Wow.
But, so that came up completely randomly, which is why we called it serendipity. And, I had to learn. Fortunately, my sister-in-law, who runs the gallery, was a real estate lawyer in her prior life. So, but we had to figure out how to negotiate the lease, what to include, how to build out the space, how to engage in marketing, I'm trying to do this remotely. Like, what are the avenues you should promote yourself in St. Louis, Missouri, where I do not live? So a lot of that. And then the gallery I am affiliated with in Palo Alto is a cooperative gallery. And so that's a completely different set of issues. You know, we're 40 artists who run the gallery cooperatively. We're all volunteers. So getting volunteers to do things versus paid employees is different. Both share some aspects, which is creating a community for artists, creating a community for collectors, figuring out, how to target people who buy art. So some things are the same, but also differences. So it's been interesting. But yeah, it just seemed like a natural evolution for me to, not only get my art out there, but get other people's art out there. So that's how the galleries came about.
Well, how do you juggle all this? How do you juggle being an artist and having that creative time with managing your work and the galleries?
So I struggle with it, as I think everyone does, who is balancing a lot of different commuting commitments. But one thing that I do is I schedule time in the studio. So I have a glass studio that's not where I live, and I offer open studio hours so other artists can come and use the equipment and use the space, and I also teach classes there. So that gets me to the studio 2 to 3 days a week because I have people coming. And it's great both because I then have a community, I have people to talk to, I have people to swap ideas with, but it also gets me there and gives me dedicated time for creativity. And I made a conscious decision not to have internet at the studio, not to have a computer. That is purely creative space. And then
that's
the rest of the
huge. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, just pause. No internet. Wait a minute. Freak out.
Yes.
All right. We're all with you on this. Okay, good.
So when I'm there, I have my phone so people can reach me if necessary, and I can look things up if I need to, figure out a firing schedule or whatever. So I'm not, completely cut off from the world. But it was a conscious choice. Like, this is creative space. This is creative time. I am not doing computer work there. And then I do dedicate time the other days or mornings of the afternoons I'll go to the studio. I will dedicate to working for the galleries. And, getting my personal life taken care of, doing my laundry, et cetera.
Right. So you do have a great balance, is what I'm hearing, between your different lives. And you're doing this by carving time out for the different areas. And some people these days are talking about blending work and life. But it sounds like you also have a way of separating the different areas because they require different parts of your brain and just different ways of being.
Yeah, they definitely require different parts of my brain. And I've learned through trial and error that I really need structure. You know, when I first left Google, I was like, oh, this is great. No meetings, no responsibilities. I can do whatever I want. And I discovered nothing got done because I'm a person who needs structure. So I have to, like, impose structure on myself or I'll waste the days playing games on my iPad all day or reading a book, which is not a waste, but, you know, it, not producing things that might need to get done. So I do definitely need, you know, I leave the house, you know, Mondays and Thursdays at this time and, you know, whatever. I had to create a structure for myself, a schedule for myself, which I can cheat on because I'm my own boss. And if I feel like reading a book this afternoon, I, you know, could skip the studio if nobody was going to be there. But I find that it helps to know when I can get things done. So to know that, you know, I'm going to the studio this week, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday afternoons, and I can get things done Wednesday. So, you know, I can devote that day to a whole bunch of tasks and tell people I'll get them done. Accountability is another important thing. Letting people know I will have something to them by a certain date lights a fire under me and gets me to actually do it.
Well, here you have it. Here's the art of real life, actually, right in just a synopsis here of, I love this from Rose. I've learned through trial and error, no pun intended, right, after having been a lawyer.
No pun intended.
And no pun intended. I've learned through trial and error that I need structure. And also what I'm hearing is that you need to unplug sometimes, too, to have that creative time. Huge lesson in today's world. Huge lesson that we just can't be interrupted all the time and actually keep the creative juices flowing.
Now, and sometimes creativity doesn't
on.
Come. You know, you can schedule an afternoon and you don't feel creative, but there's always something you can do, I've discovered. You know, if I'm painting, I can put in a background or, you know, paint the sides of the canvas. If I'm in the glass studio, I can cut things for a future project. There's always something you can do. And sometimes that spurs the creativity.
Yeah, so having some patience there, too, and
spending
the time doing it rather than just giving up. So
Rather than saying, oh, the muse isn't here, I'm going home, doing something, and maybe the muse comes and maybe it doesn't, but at least you're further along than you were.
Wow. This has been great, Rose. Thank you so much. I'd like to say thank you to Rose for being our leading lady today.
And thank you, Jenny. This was really fun.
Oh, good. And, you know, I'm glad, Rose, because I really enjoy hearing from a creative person and such a successful person, too. I also want to say a special thanks to all our listeners. And we'll be back again every Monday morning at 9 a.m. and every Friday at 2 p.m. for another Women Lead Radio show. Our leading lady Friday, April 21st, will be Denise Bevert, co-founder and COO at Kindred Bio. The topic will be, don't let roadblocks become stop signs. Persevere. I'm Joni Cannell, host of Real Life Lessons. Thank you for listening, and remember, real women are resilient, empowered, authentic, and limber.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.